You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. We had a hiatus there for a while, but we're back with our friend Walt Heyer. And Walt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it is. And I'll tell you something, guys. I've read a lot of books in my life, but this is Walt's book, which is called Trading My Sorrows, A True Story of Betrayals, Bad Choices, Love, and the Journey Home. Is one of the most heartwarming books I've ever read, and I had the privilege in the interim of finishing it. And so we're in the third part of a four-part interview with Walt Heyer, who for large parts of his life lived as an alternate female, in quotes, identity, Laura Jensen. Right, Ralph? Right, Walt?
Yeah, that's it.
I almost called you Ralph. You've had so many different identities, I almost gave you another one.
Well, what the heck? You know, I can tackle another one. I'm good with that.
Well, Walt, you know, this book, I really encourage people to get it. Maybe we'll try to purchase some copies for Americans for Truth, but the book is available at TradingMySorrows.com. Walt, if I can dispense with a little bit of administrative stuff before we get going.
Sure.
Just want to let people know about our banquet. Walt, if you can come out from California, that'd be awesome. It's October 15th in the Chicago area at the Christian Liberty Academy, and we're very privileged, happy to have Pastor Lutzer, Dr. Erwin Lutzer from Moody Church, very revered pastor, one of the leading evangelicals in the Midwest, and just a wonderful man, who is our keynote speaker. And we've lowered the price in the bad economy, just $10 prepaid. At the door, it's $15, because we want a lot of people to hear Dr. Lutzer, and we're talking about something which is related to Walt's struggle. I'm sure Walt has a lot of thoughts about it. You know, we specialize in the homosexuality issue. We are one of the few groups on the other side, and also this transgender issue, which is just exploding in the culture. And I dare say that if just, one in 1,000 Americans read this book, that movement would be set back tremendously, Walt, because it thrives on misinformation, essentially.
Absolutely. I mean, that's all it's about. They've set an agenda, and, you know, lies are what seems to prevail to a much greater degree than the truth, unfortunately. And I'm really working as best I can, and people like you are helping me get the truth out there, but it's... It reminds me of a game I used to play when I was in high school called Pom Pom Pull Away. You're one person holding a football, and the rest of the football team is going to tackle you. You know, so you're kind of out there on your own. But you know, we'll take anything we can get to get the truth out there. So I appreciate being on.
Oh, absolutely. And you're not getting any invitations from Oprah, I suppose, huh, Walt?
No, she has not contacted me. Amazing.
But I just enjoyed your book. And, you know, Walt, I have to say, one of the, since I finally got to finish it, and I'm not saying this because I'm a Christian. In fact, I often feel I let down the standard too often in my Christian walk. But, you know, you get the impression reading this book that Christians are neat people. They stuck with you. And at various points in your journey, out of in this incredible journey that you had for long periods of your life with doing dual identities at war with each other, almost back and forth, you described it as you're trying to make this exodus back to God made you to be, Walt Heyer, that these wonderful Christians God put in your life, and it's just heartwarming to read.
Yeah, and you know, and there's a lot of frustration on both sides. I mean, they were certainly, you know, led by the Lord Jesus Christ to help me, but yet frustrated with the difficulty I was having in embracing my God-given gender. And so bless their heart for not rejecting me too quickly, because it did take years for me to to walk out of it. It's not a quick thing.
Yeah, and that's what I wasn't aware of till I read the book, is how long you struggled back and forth. You called it, you know, this back and forth stage for what it was, really decades, wasn't it?
Well, it was probably more like five years.
Okay.
Were really difficult. It wasn't decades, but yeah, I think 5 years there was some really difficult times, and boy, I'll tell you, the power of these gender issues are just amazing when they're so ingrained, and they are ingrained from childhood development, and they get planted in there, and they're I've mentioned it before on the show where we talk about hardwiring, and they can be rewired, but it isn't done quickly.
Right, and for those listeners who are unaware, in our first interview with Walt, we described his incredible childhood, and that's all there is to it. This life story deserves telling in Hollywood. If there was any justice in Hollywood, Walt, this story would be told, not to glorify you, but to get the truth out about just the incredible circumstances of your life. You were beaten by your very disciplinarian father, whom you loved, but he had this way of you know, really beating you, abusive like, and then in a bizarre set of circumstances, you end up with your grandmother, who dressed you in a purple chiffon dress, right? And you said that.
Yeah.
And that that created a sort of identity, which I have to believe, you know, I'm believing in the devil. I believe the devil used that. And that female in the purple, that girl in the purple dress, you keep saying she was after you the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, she was. And I, you know, on my father's behalf, I think he was, you know, like so many people today that are even listening to this, just don't understand this whole gender thing. And so, you know, he was disciplining me out of his lack of understanding,
right,
number one, and then number two, out of the shame of not knowing how to help me. I'm sure deep down in his heart, you know, he felt that he had let me down, and there wasn't anything else for him that he knew to do except to try to discipline it out of me, which is not totally uncommon in rearing children. You know?
Yes, yes. And then you were sexually assaulted as a child. I mean, right. And you were afraid to tell your parents, or you did tell them, but they didn't believe you.
Exactly.
Which affected you. And then you had that circumstance. And I this is amazing. Where you confessed to an Episcopal priest your struggles with this alternate female identity, and the guy gets you in his office, tries to ply you with alcohol, and strips down to his birthday suit and lays on the ground and invites you for a homosexual sex. I mean, unbelievable what you've experienced. And
it's
truth is stranger than fiction, Walt.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, too, that we touched on. I think it's important for the listeners to know that the great number of transgender people are not homosexuals. The assumption is they are, but they are not. Certainly, they begin to wonder about it, you know, because of what's going on, but they don't act out on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I'll tell you what, and I want to get into it in this interview. You know, the love that Christians showed you, welcoming you in, whether they didn't understand you, the testimony of your pastor, Jeff Farrar, you know, it's just amazing how the love that they showed when you were living, even as Laura Jensen,
right?
You know, and a lot of the people could not have understood, and yet they just showed that love, that unconditional love of Christ, and it's amazing to read it.
Right, and I think it's important also that, you know, they made it clear that that God was probably going to do something in my life, and it wasn't for them to judge what was going to be done. And I think this Pastor Jeff's comment about my job is to love you, God's job is to change you, and when that seed was planted, you know, it changed the focus of what I felt the church was to do, and that was, I was there to build a relationship with Jesus Christ and allow that relationship to transform my life. And the people in the church were there just to support what God was doing in my life. And sometimes we miss that. People in leadership of churches think it's their job to change people and to judge them and bring them along. Jeff, by the same token, just felt it was important to love on them and get them in relationship with Christ so Christ could do that job.
Mm-hmm. And yet we always hold out, obviously, God's standard. And, we're dealing with a lot on the homosexual issue of people who want to show the love, but then they start also, in combination with that, compromising God's standard and saying that people are sort of naturally homosexual and God doesn't expect, fidelity to his own word. And I think that's the other error that comes in.
Well, that is the slippery slope. And we see, in my personal opinion, we see too much tolerance and acceptance within the church today and not enough focus on the transformation through relationship with Christ. I mean, the key element in our relationship with Christ is one word. It's called obedience to Christ. And it's not obedience to our behavior. It's obedience to Christ and what's in Scripture. And once we grasp that, and don't try to alter it, change it, or make it something other than what Christ intended it to be, then we're on the right track.
Wonderful, wonderful, Walt. And let's go through, before we get into some of the examples of love that you benefited from, let's talk about your websites. You've got TradingMySorrows.com, where people can get the book. They can also get that through Amazon.
Right.
Amazon. And then what are your other two websites?
I've got
Sex Change Info.
Regret and Sex Change Info.
Sex Change Regret and SexChangeInfo.com. Our website at Americans for Truth is Americans for Truth, all written out, AmericansForTruth.org. Again, please sign up for our banquet. Send us an email at AmericansForTruth@gmail.com for our banquet October 15th. We'll be right back after the break. To the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We are a single issue group on the other side of the powerful and much better funded homosexual activist movement. And a part of that movement, actually now a large part of that movement, promotes transgenderism. And it's everywhere. The idea that you can sort of embrace whatever gender you want. How many genders are there now, Walt?
they invent them on a daily basis, so I've lost track. They've got fluid genders. They've got
genderqueer. That's a growing one. Are you familiar with this use of genderqueer?
It's so absurd any longer that you just sort of rock back in your seat and go, what's coming next? I mean, the fact of the matter is that it's all just part of the homosexual agenda to. I think kind of advance the cause of same-sex marriage. They're trying to destroy gender as we know it, period. That's their objective. They really would prefer to have no gender identity. That way they can have same-sex marriage without the gender identity.
Now, we had made a mistake on our website when we just described the show by saying, you fall into that sex change, calling it sex change operation, and you wrote a nice note, and I still have to fix it, Walt, but tell those listeners again, you cannot change your sex, you cannot change your gender either.
Right.
Talk about that.
Yeah, people need to understand that, again, what this activist movement is trying to convince you that when they go through surgery and have hormones, that they've somehow transported themselves from one gender to the other. Well, it's a lie. It's not possible. It's a cosmetic thing. It's just like somebody playing a role in a movie that we see on this big screen. So we need to understand that everything about the gender movement is false and misleading information. Number one, they don't need the surgery. Number two, when they get the surgery, it does not change their gender sex. Period. It is absolutely impossible, except with the people who were born with both genitalia.
Yes.
And those are very, very rare, and they are not transgender people. They are called intersex. So,
yeah. But the gay transgender lobby tries to use those people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They're pawns in their big scheme.
Yeah. Now, I found it fascinating to learn that when you tried to. The book describes, and this is Walt Heyer's book, Trading My Sorrows, which I encourage you to get. I also encourage you to invite Walt to speak at your church give him a forum to tell his amazing story. But as you had this battle, Laura Jensen, Walt Heyer, you had two, you described Laura Jensen as sort of an escape from all your memories as a child, the tough memories you had. But when you were back to moving further and further towards wanting to live as Walt Heyer, the man God made you to be, you went to go change your birth certificate. You had your birth certificate had been changed to female.
Right.
When you, after you had your so-called gender reassignment surgery, then when you went back to change it, they wouldn't let you change it in California, correct?
Right. Well, we've tried three different times in Superior Court to present documents to allow me to change it back to my birth gender, and was refused. And that is so abhorrent to me because, the gender was changed as a result of a surgery that didn't change me, and they'll change a birth record on false information, but they won't change it back on truthful information. It's just amazing.
It is truly amazing. And you had a great comment in your book where you said, hey, how about DNA testing? You know, we have this DNA testing to solve crimes. It's doing all these things. DNA tests prove you're a man.
Right.
You are a male. How about just a DNA test? Of course, what's really shocking, Walt, is that the transgender movement is using this birth certificate as another tool in their radical program to, gender... to change genders. It's becoming easier and easier to go back and change your birth certificate, change your license, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. If you're transporting yourself to becoming a transgender,
yes,
part of that community, then that's fine. But if you're coming out of it, there isn't any sort of relief valve for coming back. And I think it's just so... it's so disturbing that they have been allowed to have, the homosexual activists have been allowed to have such freedom with such an important document that, in my view, is once it's changed as a result of surgery, it's a piece of fraud. It's a fraudulent, untrue document.
But also, you can now, and correct me if I'm wrong, Walt, you can change your license whether you've had the surgery or not. If you start living, say, I want to live as a female, do they let you change it before the surgery?
The birth record in very few states now, that you can't do that in every state. They're trying to get to that point to where without the surgery, you can have your birth record changed. That's where they're going, and that's the leaning direction. However, what they're allowing people to do is have a driver's license and Social Security card so that they can present themselves in a different gender without the surgery. That is going on pretty much across the board. Some states still do not allow a person to change their birth gender, which those states I applaud and support as actually having some brain matter left in what they're doing with the birth records.
Yeah, and I would imagine those states probably correlate more often than not to red states versus blue states. That's just
absolutely.
I know in Illinois, I think you can change here in the People's Republic of Illinois, you can change your birth certificate. Now, Walt, we've got 5 minutes to the break, and really, I don't think in any of these interviews we haven't talked much about your alcoholism. Alcohol became another vehicle for you to. You went through this incredible situation where you gradually were more and more tormented by your. This female persona that was living in your head, it became like a fantasy and it became an obsession. And I want to read a paragraph from your book and then have you comment. You say on page 62, well, you talk about how alcoholics can be baffling and incomprehensible in their way of thinking. And you were talking about how you plan to live after your surgery. And then you say, quote, it's hard to describe how the desire for surgery takes over, especially when combined with abusive alcohol. It took on the appearance of an obsessive-compulsive disorder, like a bulldozer pushing me relentlessly and single-mindedly towards surgery, while destroying every obstacle in its way. Lying, cheating, and manipulating were my tools of the trade. So this was a drive that ultimately you made this horrible decision to have it, but this obsession had grown and grown to the point where you actually went through and had the awful operation.
Right. And you know, alcohol, it doesn't help a person make good decisions. I've never seen a person who's an alcoholic that's all that brilliant when he's under the influence over a long period of time like I was. So alcohol sort of allows you the opportunity to do life the wrong way and to act out things that you believe to be true that aren't true. And they also, alcohol also allows you to destroy your life, you know, one episode at a time. And that's what I did.
Yeah. And you write, you say, my bad choices had destroyed my identity, my family, and my career. You lost your family effectively over this when you told your ex-wife that you were, you know, you almost had the surgery. You went and then you came back and, later on you did have the surgery. You know, it had done its damage. It had drastically harmed your relationship with your daughter and your son. It's very touching how your son stayed with you throughout everything. And yet, you talk about it, this was a selfish drive. It becomes all about me, me, me. And I see that very much so in how the movement operates. And the same thing with the homosexual movement. It's all about me. Everything becomes almost a rationale to justify this this way that you believe that you have to live.
Yeah, it's so narcissistic. I mean, you just don't care about anything else. You're the only thing important. You are the world. Everybody else is unimportant. And what I want is the most important, which I think points to how mentally disturbed people are who get themselves into that position and begin to believe that you can actually change your gender. That's one of the things that I want to, you know, really for the people to know is that knowing that you can't, I wished someone would have said, you know, it's categorically impossible to change your gender. You need to do something else. And that message needs to get out because we're harming people every day with this surgery. We're harming and destroying families just like mine every day with this surgery.
But also you talk about how the torment continued after the operation. You had this brief glowing, wow, everything's new and I'm finally in that job. But then the torment continued.
Right. And I think it's so important for us who know and have a relationship with Jesus Christ to understand that we're tormented by our feelings, our thoughts sometimes are not good thoughts, but these things should not drive us away from God, but should actually be the tools that drive us to a stronger relationship with Christ, not one that separates us from Him. And I learned that, you know, the hard way. And the more that I struggled, the more that I realized that I needed Jesus Christ and I needed to not allow myself to be tripped up by these issues and these thoughts. That committee in my head finally calmed down, but it took many years and many struggles to get to that point to where I wasn't struggling with it. But I didn't allow it to completely upside down my life any longer.
Yeah. And one of your great Christian friends, Roy Thompson, said, we had no precedence for this situation in our relationships, nor did we find any specific scripture as a roadmap through this minefield. We did know that we had a responsibility to love her. And at that time, that her was you. About this, he says, scriptures were clear. So you had the love of Christians coming around you. God used them to effectuate this amazing change in your life, which we'll talk more about after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, folks, to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to Walt Heyer, who I've gotten to know, and it's been a real privilege. He's a great guy with an amazing story. And, you know, I'm not saying this facetiously. There are Christian filmmakers out there, some of whom will stumble upon our website and listen to this show, and I issue a challenge. This story, Walt Heyer's life story, deserves to be told in film. I mean, this is an amazingly interesting story. And, of course, one thing that our side, I'm saying the side of truth, Christianity, we don't tell the stories as well as the other side. You know, there's this group, GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, very powerful in Hollywood. You've heard of the Lavender Mafia, Walt. You know, yeah. These guys now have this access. You talk about, there's a show called Access Hollywood. They've got the ultimate access. They pre-approve scripts on issues of homosexuality, bisexuality, transsexuality, lesbianism. And so you better believe when you see a transgender character on in the movies or in a sitcom, it's been vetted by GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation.
Absolutely.
GLAAD hates the change that Walt has gone through.
Oh.
They would not tolerate to hear Walt's story told. And so at this time, when there is absolutely zero stories of healthy ex-gays, healthy ex-transsexuals in Hollywood, we need the Christians to step up. We need the alternate filmmakers to step up and tell these stories. And they need to tell your story, Walt, because it's one of the most interesting life stories I've ever read in my life.
Well, thanks.
And, you know, this is just, our stories need to be told because the power of transformation is wonderful. And just, you know, for your, at the ending of the book is just, you know, I'm going to give it away a little bit. But, you know, Walt, you end up marrying your bride, Casey. Am I pronouncing that right?
Right, Casey, yeah.
Casey, how long have you been married?
We've been married to over 14 years.
Over 14 years after, you know, God changes you. He helps you to get back to the man you were born to be. And then he surprises you with a new wife. And it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I was, and I'm still blown away every day. I mean, she is just, she loves the Lord. She's worked in the church and she just embraces what God has done in my life, and she has just been there every step of the way. She's the one that does all the editing and all the graphic work and everything on the books. She puts the books together, and so she is just one great champion of Jesus Christ for repairing broken lives. So, yeah, we're very much in love and have a lot of fun, and the Lord's just weaved us together in a very special way.
Yeah, and that's just that's a miracle, and you've had a lot of miracles in your life, and I would say that the people that the Lord put in your path, he was looking out for you, Walt,
that's, oh, yeah.
As he looks out for all of us, and, you know, it's convicting. You read the story, and there is so much love, and, you know, I've said it many times, it's a fine line. Groups like Americans for Truth are there to witness to the truth of the Scriptures, which is reaffirmed in the natural world. There are ministries who are devoted to loving homosexuals, but people tell the truth are also called to love, and people who are all about loving people trapped in sexual sin and gender confusion are also called to stand for the truth. And it's that radical balance that we strive for. And I'm just thankful that, you had people in your life who did that for you, and they were honoring God all along the way.
And I
commend all of them.
You know, and they're in my life today, too. I mean, I still communicate with all of them. I still, Jeff and some of the gals from church that were on staff at church, Roy, who's now in Thailand. But we still have this great communication. In fact, Roy wrote the foreword in my book, Paper Genders. But I did want to support one of the things you said about GLAAD. You know, one of the shows I was watching this week, which is called The Closer, and in that show, they had a pastor. This is what these people, the activists, are doing to try to indoctrinate our society. They had a pastor in a church that was a pastor of a large church in a motel room, and they went through this thing about how he was going secretly to this motel room to cross-dress. And so they showed that as the depravity of pastors and churches, and then showed that his son, the pastor's son, was a homosexual. So, you know, they continue to try to permeate this message, not only on the news, but they also do it on the small screen, on the television. Every show that you watch today has got some inference to how someone is a transgender or they're a homosexual. And this really, Peter, is their attempt to make it look like everyone is a transgender and everyone's homosexual.
Right. Yeah, of course. They've greatly exaggerated the presence of homosexuality, now transsexuality. And of course, the subtext of what you described is that the hypocritical Christian.
Right.
And what's interesting is that in your book, you did cross-dress at hotels.
Yes.
You were a hugely successful businessman.
Yes.
Everything came crushing down. I don't know. We haven't told much of that story, how your career came to a crashing halt when you confessed to your boss that you were a cross-dresser.
Right.
He freaked out, basically. And within a few days, I guess, a couple of weeks, you were out.
Within 24 hours.
Within 24 hours, you were out with a 6-month severance, right? And saying,
yeah,
that's it. And don't ever try to get your job back.
No, they wouldn't even let me clean my desk out. They said, we'll do that for you. Just head to the front gate. Don't come back.
Yeah, so I mean, you've lived it all, but the reality from your life story is that yes, there was a corrupt priest. He was an Episcopal priest,
yes,
who was a homosexual who tried to who when you confessed your story, what did he do? He tried to seize on it as a almost of a predator, although you were an adult at the time, and he tried to seduce you with alcohol, and then you say that later on. He ended up, I don't know if you want to say his name right here, Walt, but he ended up pastoring a, quote, gay-friendly church in Hollywood, right?
In Hollywood, yeah. I saw him on television. I was watching television one morning, and here he is, Father Carol Barber. He was leading a homosexual church. Now, when I first met him as a youngster, he was not out as a homosexual, but eventually, they obviously found out that he was, and he's leading a homosexual church primarily filled with homosexuals in Hollywood. So, you know, in the Episcopal Church, that's one of the churches where, you know, it's okay. I mean, they say you don't have to change, that you're made that way, which is not true.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're ordaining. Could you comment, Walt, as somebody who's experienced such dramatic transformation, and it wasn't easy. You read this book, you do not get the picture of God snapping his fingers and saying, okay, Walt, you're a man again. It was you went through years of struggle with this battle, but you had Christians coming alongside you. Can you comment, Walt, on this idea now? I'm talking mainly about in the homosexual world. Now you've got these evangelicals coming along and saying most homosexuals can't change, and they seem to be throwing water on the idea of radical transformation rather than celebrating, even though you weren't homosexual, people like you who experienced radical transformation. Many people who once thought they were gay, and they are completely out of it. Can you talk about this new, I don't know what we call it, left-wing evangelicalism, corrupt evangelicalism, which seems to want to say the homosexual cannot change?
Well, I think my view, again, this is just my view, is that there are people who have really given up on their relationship with Jesus Christ and would prefer not to get into these battles with the homosexual activists because they are like a mob. I mean, they're really tough on groups. They will come out to your church and picket you and so forth. And I think there's so many churches that are so fearful of the homosexual agenda that they would prefer to yield to the homosexuals than follow Christ and his teaching. And I think we all need to understand struggles are difficult. But I believe every struggle we have is designed by God because of the evil in the world, is designed by God to drive us to Him, not away from Him. And that's so important. Everybody who has a gender issue, who's homosexual, if they have the desire to be transformed by Jesus Christ, if they have that desire and are obedient to Jesus Christ, will be transformed by the power, grace, and love of Christ. They will be.
Yeah. And why would you hold up, why would you seek to reaffirm, as much of the secular culture does the sort of near impossibility? They don't say it's impossible, but they pretty much are trying to say it ain't going to happen for most people. I don't really see that. I don't see a faithful Christian being I don't think that's something a faithful Christian should be saying.
Well, they bought the worldview and given up on the view of Christ as being able to transform a broken life. And that's not to say that a person whose life is transformed won't have, you know, thoughts and difficulties in the struggle after they've had that nice relationship with Christ. But it does mean they don't have to act out on their thoughts and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the critical part. You know, people think that it's just going to go totally away. Well, that's not true. The fact of the matter is that those thoughts are part of your life. You're going to have them, but you do not need to act out on them. Christ gives you the power to resist acting out and behaving in a way that does not honor, glorify Jesus Christ.
Do you still have tempting thoughts where the enemy comes in and says, "Hey, Walt, oh, come on, you know, Laura's still here"?
I don't have them to the degree that they used to, but you think about your past.
Yeah.
And I've said this before. I think there are times when you think that it's zany or fun or whatever. You think about those times when it was, but they're not the thoughts that drive you to wanting to change back. Not at all.
Right, right. We're talking to Walt Heyer, who's written a book called Trading My Sorrows. He's got other books on his website, which is TradingMySorrows.com, TradingMySorrows.com. Our website at Americans for Truth is AmericansForTruth.org. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Walt Heyer, who is once thought of himself as Laura Jensen and other female names. Incredible story of life transformation through the power of Jesus Christ. Walt, you were ultimately diagnosed as having multiple personality disorder and not gender identity disorder. Can you talk about that for just a minute?
Well, that was one of the things I was diagnosed with multiple personality disorder. However, after a period of time in recovery from the gender issues, we found that everybody who has a gender issue has some sort of a dissociative disorder, and they don't rise to the level of multiple personalities. And probably in my particular case, that diagnosis probably was not fully accurate. I think it's safe to say that there was a dissociation, but while it was diagnosed by several doctors as being multiple, I think there's fads that they go through in psychology, and it was a fad at that time, and they didn't know where else to put me, and that's where they put me. So,
and if I could talk as a, you know, most people have no clue. I mean, you know, don't really know what to think about such a thing. But it's clear that now, of course, the secularists and the atheists will hate us, and a lot of the gay activists for me for saying this. But there was a battle between good and evil in your life.
Oh yeah,
I do believe in the devil, and if there's ever any evidence of the devil at work, the devil versus God in a person's life, I mean, it's yours. Let me just read a paragraph here, Walt, and have you comment on it.
Sure.
You were talking in this part about the back and forth struggles that you had between this sort of fantasy identity who would take you away from all the troubles that you had as a child. You said, "Exhausted from my schedule, I experienced a new level of difficulty in coping. Laura battled for internal control. I was terribly uncomfortable in my own skin. I couldn't find peace no matter how I dressed or acted. I cycled back and forth compulsively, almost without warning, between being Walt and being Laura. Pull off the highway, take off the dress and put on the slacks. wipe off the lipstick and comb my hair, or vice versa, put on the dress and the lipstick and poof up my hair. And it didn't stop with appearance. Walt ate junk food. Laura ate healthy food. And on it goes. And it's just incredible that this, I think it's almost incredible that you survived this almost manic back and forth in this terrible time in your life.
Well, it is, and I do think that the Lord brought me through it all so that I could tell the story and show that He does have the power to transform a life, no matter how badly broken, how badly disturbed, how full of alcohol, and how full of nonsense it was. He has the power to transform such a life as He did mine.
Yeah, you said you were on the trash. At one point when you hit your lowest, you felt you were sort of the trash heap of humanity, you called it.
Yeah, I did. I thought I was what I called the throwaway part of humanity. We just throw them away. They're worthless.
And we're talking, there are throwaways who are going to hear this show, people who feel rejected. They feel there's no place else to go. And they, like you, they see this false hope in this awful mutilating surgery, which has left you without body parts, Walt. But now, even from this show, which I'm happy to report, even from our doing these interviews, you are being contacted by people who say who you are trying to say don't do that operation. Talk right. About some of this correspondence that you get on a regular basis now, Walt.
Yeah, well, there's so many people that and much of it that I get now are people who've gone through it and want to know how they can come back out of it. But there are also people who struggle with the idea that they need to change, and as a result of listening to this and my correspondence with them, I do exactly what I've been doing with you on here, is trying to explain to them that Christ is trying to drive you to Him, and that He is trying to show you who you are in that relationship with Him. That's the most key component, is that He will show you who you are when you join in relationship with Him and you walk away from that alternate gender identity. That's the key point. And you talk about the scrap heap of life, and I think it's so demonstrated, Peter, in the fact that 41% of the transgender population before and after surgery will attempt suicide. Those people feel like they're on the scrap heap of life. They feel like they're part of throwaway society. They're not getting the treatment they need. They're not getting good sound psychological advice from people who truly want to help them. All they're getting is this concept that they need surgery, which is totally wrong.
And even in one point in your book, Walt, you the guy who approved you for the operation, who turns out had a drinking problem himself, and was he a homosexual?
He was a homosexual with a drinking and drug problem, and he was the author of the Harry Benjamin International Standards of Care. He was the chairperson. He's the guy that wrote him. He's the guy that promoted him. That's the kind of homosexual activist that you have leading this sex change operation. It's totally bogus. It's totally an activist movement. You don't see people with good gray matter advocating that you should have sex change surgery for a psychological problem. It's just totally bizarre.
Well, you managed to get a letter from him where he apologizes. He said it was a mistake approving you. But even in the letter, what I found interesting was he said, quote, "I had seen too many cases of post-surgical regret." So
right.
Here's the leading authority at the time who approved your operation, who says, and this is dated 1990, May 28th, 1990, he said he saw a lot of out of regret, and yet you say that even today, talking about the regret is not really approved of by the pro-transgender movement.
No, that's the only time I've ever seen them, anybody associated with the gender movement, admit that there's a lot of regret. I mean, there is no question that it's huge, and I see it on the letters that I get. I put on my website, Sex Change Regret. People need to go there and take a look at some of those letters. You can also see the research that I've done that it comes out of Sweden that shows that no one is satisfied years after the surgery. I mean, there's always that wonderful glow of euphoria early on in that transition process that you think you've made the greatest move of your life, and that crumbles. It's sort of like the alcoholic who's out having a good time one night, and then you wake up the next day and you get this hangover, except this one lasts a lifetime.
Yeah, and you're living. I mean, it's amazing. You're living without your sex organ, but God's given you the grace, and you're even married. But these, you know, ideas have consequences, Walt.
Absolutely.
And are you having success? Give us some hope. We got a minute left. You know, you're talking to people. Are you reaching people? Are they seeing the light that they don't have to have the operation? Or even if they have had it, they can return to the gender that God made them, the sex that God made them.
Yeah, I have had people write me back and say, as a result of either communicating with me or reading my book, or even listening on these shows, that they have decided not to do the surgery. And, you know, when I started this out and just sharing my life with people, I just wanted to have one person. I felt if I could just turn one person back to their family, then I would have achieved success. But I see more than that. I don't count them up. I don't chalk them off as a you know, like you do the notches on a gun. It's just to be able to spread the word of Jesus Christ and allow the Lord to transform those lives. That's what I want to do, because He can do it if you're willing to have Him transform your life. It will happen.
Well, Walt, thanks for agreeing to be on this program. We have one more interview with you. You are indeed, as your pastor said, a trophy of God's grace. And I'm just blessed to be able to share this story. Folks, we got one more interview with Walt Heyer. Go listen to the earlier interviews at our website, AmericansForTruth.com. Go out and tell the truth and share it with others. God bless you.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.